Jump shot. It's good. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies. As always, I'm your host, Mark King. For this show, the Wednesday Better Late Than Never episode with Joe Mullenix, site manager of Grizzly Bear Blues, like we do every single Wednesday on this show. Joe joins us to talk about all things Grizzlies. Before we get to Joe, make sure you go subscribe to this show, whatever podcast platform you're using. It's available in every single one, I promise. If you have a smart device, just say, play the latest podcast and it'll do it. It's pretty awesome. Leave a review, rate the show on Apple iTunes. It really helps us. I'd appreciate that. Now let's get to Joe. Joe, why do you hate fun so much, Joe? I don't understand.
I am the arsonist. I am excellent at starting a blaze and then putting it out. That is what I'm learning. I've been the resident killer of fun. And
look, not all heroes wear capes, Joe. Not all heroes wear capes.
I tell you what. Heroes, villains, and not all villains wear masks, I guess, either. I'm just out there in the open. I'm the villain of Grizzlies bloggerdom, hybrid media, whatever the hell you want to call me. I'm hated by
the
by
resident
many out there.
The resident heel, if you will, yeah. For all those wrestling fans out there. Let's take
That's
this in
piece.
Let's take
it.
This show in pieces. Let's the Grizzlies are obviously and now have a playoff run. And in the midst of a playoff contention, all in good fun though. So the Grizzlies are in the playoff mix for good or worse, and it's largely because most of those teams are sucky. Like, let's just be really honest with ourselves, because last year they wouldn't even be close to the playoff race. But that's okay. First of all, let's talk about the playoffs. We'll get to the tweet that came out later from, I believe it was Keith Smith, about the Grizzlies buying and selling the trade down. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. Let's talk about the playoffs first. I take it, and I am obviously just having fun with the playoffs. And like I mentioned, if the Grizzlies are last year, they don't even sniff the playoffs at this point. It's largely because a lot of those teams are bad. And I'm largely in the sense that, you know, as long as this doesn't change the way you view this team all along, and I think you're probably in the same boat, it's great. And it's also just good to have fun. Like, I'm okay with just having fun with this team. And if that's us cheering for the playoffs, so be it. And I think you probably fall in the same boat in the sense that as long as they don't change their worldview in terms of what it takes to get there, that's okay.
Yes, I am okay with that. And I'm okay with what a lot of people say with regards to the postseason push. I'm not a killer of fun. I'm consistent. As I was just recently called on Twitter, I'm stubborn as hell. I am someone who, at the very beginning of the season, and Jeff Calkins, I do a weekly hit with Gary Parrish on 92.9 in Memphis, and he talked to Calkins later on in the show. And Jeff Calkins, they were talking about this because, again, I have set Grizzlies fandom ablaze the last 72 hours. They were talking about this idea, and Calkins mentioned, and I appreciate it, it was very kind of him, a feature that I wrote at the very beginning of the season called The Emancipation of the Memphis Grizzlies. And in it, I talk about how nice it will be that for the first time in a long time, because people need to remember, the last 2 years before this one, playoffs were expected. Like, Mike Conley and Marc Gasol were supposed to get this team to the playoffs. That was supposed to happen. It just didn't. For a variety of reasons, whether it's the Conley injury from a couple of years prior, whether it's the fact that they just weren't good enough to get the job done, which I would say is a majority of the issue, and most folks thought they would be, myself included. But they just, the playoffs have always been the expectation, at least almost the entirety of the past decade. Now you have a chance to just let things happen organically. Let things grow naturally. Let it just be. And for a while there, it felt like that was being allowed to happen. But then, you know, you had whispers in November, and maybe I just, you know, get interactive with all the crazy people on social media. But, you know, there are people saying we need to trade Jaren Jackson Jr. because he's not playing to his capabilities, or we need to, you know, bench Ja Morant in crunch time because he's making mistakes. You do neither of those things. You don't do that stuff. Maybe I'm the only one that sees this. Maybe I'm the only one that pays it any heed or credence. But a fan base is not an echo chamber. There's not just one or two people that you surround yourself, or especially if you're a media member and everybody looks at each other because they follow the team closely. And in the case of you and others that are actually on the ground in Memphis, you talk to players, you talk amongst yourselves. Everybody can look at each other and say, yeah, this will be fun. This will be great. If they win, that's great. If they lose, that's great. In my experience with this fan base and in my experience with the organization, now obviously it looks a lot different now, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. I do think that it's okay in my situation to be a little more cautious and say, hey, the Spurs are coming in here and they're playing really well. They just blew out Boston at home, okay? The Spurs are on a heater. And there's going to be fans that go into FedEx Forum on Friday night or log on to Twitter or social media, and they settle in to watch that game. I wouldn't be surprised in the least if San Antonio won by double digits, because they're better than the Memphis Grizzlies right now. But there's going to be people that say, that's a bad loss. They should have competed better. Where's the fight? Where's the heart? And I don't want the burden of expectation on this young team. If you truly can look at this team, and if they lose five in a row coming into the tougher stretch of their schedule that's coming up in March and April, they lose 5, 6, 7 games out of 10, and they fall out of this playoff hunt, and you can truly say and mean it in your heart, hey, we had fun, it was a cool run, but this is who they are, I'll tip my cap to you. But I am a little bit more realistic, maybe bordering on pessimistic, that that's not how this is going to go.
So here's what I would say to that is if it's a young team, and we talked about on the show last week, this very thing of learning how to win. And I understand the expectations, because there really shouldn't be an expectation, because I'm with you. If they make the playoffs, that's great. If they don't, you would never expect to make the playoffs anyway. And it's still a win. Like that's how I view it. And it should be a win no matter what. If they make it, great, because they're going to get bounced in the first round by the Lakers. If they don't, that's cool too. And they were never supposed to make it anyway. Had a great season, pat you on the back, and move on with your life. But if we're talking about learning how to win, don't you want those young players in games that matter? Like in a playoff race, learning how to overcome that sooner rather than later?
I want them to compete every night. I want them and their coaching staff to line up and have blatant disregard for whatever the front office's plan is for them. And I think it's fair to say to this point that they've done just that in terms of being ahead of schedule. You know, they're 4 or 5 games up in terms of their current pace of wins from what Vegas thought they would do. That would make them a success. And I think that is what the definition of success should be this season. If they win 30 games, that should be viewed as a success, because they weren't expected to win 30 games. And obviously they're on pace right now to win more than 30 games. But that pace is likely going to slow because the schedule gets tougher. And I don't want, like I said, my concern is that now people are going to see this run of success, which is something to be proud of and something to be happy about, and say that it's a reason to not trade Jay Crowder if a good trade comes along, or not move on from Solomon Hill by waiving him so you could get a 2-for-1 deal done with Andre Iguodala's contract, or you don't make a move in terms of if someone offers you the world, like the Atlanta Hawks for Jonas Valanciunas, they for some reason offer you Kevin Huerter and a first-round pick as part of a package to get Valanciunas. Are you going to say no to that because he's an important part of this year's team? I just don't think that that is smart. And I worry that not everybody is as level-headed as you. And again, all it takes is, you know, a few folks go out there and put out, you know, bad juju, tweet somebody on Twitter, boo Ja Morant after missing a game-winning shot to make the Grizzlies go on a seven-game losing streak at home. You know, these are all things that I could see happen with the schedule that's about to come out for Memphis. And missing that shot, Ja Morant will not be a worse player if that hypothetical situation were to occur than he is right now. He's still going to be the young player who is going to still be Rookie of the Year, but these guys are going to make mistakes, and I don't want it to be viewed through the lens of, we lost out on a playoff opportunity because of that. I want it to stay, hey, they're a young team, they got hot, they've cooled off a little bit, that was to be expected. That's what I hope sticks, and my concern is that it's not across the entire fan base.
That's fair. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come right back. We'll continue this conversation right where we left off. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Joe Monix like we do every single week on this show. And that leads me into the next conversation of, you know, making those trades, doing the type of things. I think it was from Keith Smith that said that he was hearing the Grizzlies would be, as you call it, sneaky buyers, as he put it in that tweet. I believe that's what he said. I'm not exactly sure, but sneaky buyers at the trade deadline, looking for them to possibly, you know, upgrade players that fit their core, not necessarily giving away, taking on bad contracts, but to selling off their assets. I read that as exactly what it was, is that that was the plan all along. Like we already had this conversation a little bit on Twitter, but I read that as exactly what it was. The fact that they were planning on selling their contracts and trying to make their team better in the sense that they're going to go out and get what they can get for their expiring contracts and Jay Crowder and possibly Solomon Hill and Andre Iguodala. How did you read that? You clearly read it a different way than I did.
In the past, Mark King, how have the Memphis Grizzlies been buyers at trade deadlines?
Okay. I'll entertain us. In the past, the Grizzlies have been trade deadline buyers and trying to improve their roster right now to get Justin Holiday for 2 second round picks. That's how they've been theirs in the past.
Okay, right. And then go even deeper into the past. Think a little bit further along.
Maybe like a Green type of deal?
That's what I'm insinuating, the post-traumatic stress that I still endure from that on a daily basis on Twitter and elsewhere. But even beyond that, go to 2013, where the Memphis Grizzlies gave up a first-round pick, Wayne Ellington, Murray Spates, and Josh Selby, to get John Luehr from the Cleveland Cavaliers to make room for the Rudy Gay trade that eventually happened. Now, you can argue that Tayshaun Prince being here obviously helped with the Western Conference final run, and I think that's something that's a fair thing to reason, but there's a history, and obviously it's with a completely different front office structure, but when you hear the word buyer, the way that it was being defined in our Twitter conversations, whether it was with you or Anthony Sane or whoever it was, is not the way that it's been traditionally defined. When you're buying something at the trade deadline, you're giving up an asset. You're giving something of future value to improve your team in the moment. If you're a seller, you are giving up that asset, that current good player, in exchange for something in the future. When I hear buyer and seller, I think the Grizzlies should be sellers at the trade deadline, because you can take a Jay Crowder and you can send him to the Clippers for Mo Harkless and a second-round pick, or a first-round pick, maybe the Philadelphia 76ers first-rounder that they have this year that won't be particularly high, but that's still an asset that you'll have possession of that you wouldn't have had otherwise. And Jay Crowder is likely, it's not written in stone, maybe they want to bring him back, but all signs point to Jay Crowder's expiring contract being worth more to the Grizzlies in the long term than Jay Crowder the player. And that's not to disrespect Jay Crowder. He's been a tremendous asset to the team. By all accounts, he's been a pro's pro. He's done what he's done his entire career, but there's also a reason that Jay Crowder has been traded as many times as he's been traded. We just need to be honest about that. So the definition of buyer and seller is where the difference is. And I think that as conversations continued on social media, the way that it was explained to me the way others were perceiving it is similar to the way that you said it. But Chase at Deep Fried Couch actually said it in a way that made the most sense to me. It is getting access to contracts, getting access to players that maybe you wouldn't have had access to otherwise
or it gives you an advantage in terms of negotiations with a restricted free agent, like a Malik Beasley. I think Matt Hardlick is the one who brought up Beasley, but that's a great example. If you can trade Crowder to the Denver Nuggets for Malik Beasley, because Beasley's fallen out of the rotation there, even if he gets minutes there, it's spot minutes on random nights, maybe dependent on matchups, if that. If you can get Malik Beasley, who is a young player who can be a shooter, who can create off the dribble a little bit, who has a game that can continue to expand, and you can get him for Jay Crowder, that's cautiously buying. You're taking a calculated risk on a younger player, and you're giving up a veteran who has done good things for you in exchange for that. Jay Crowder will be more valuable to Denver in their playoff push coming up than he would be to Memphis. That trade makes sense. And I think that if you look at it through that prism, that line of sight, you think about being a buyer in that way, that gets my support. Where you lose me is where you try to come up with a deal involving Solomon Hill and Andre Iguodala and a future first-round pick that you got from the trades you made over the summer for Kevin Love. Like, that's a trade that theoretically makes the Memphis Grizzlies better now. Is Kevin Love better than Jonas Valanciunas now? Maybe. I'd have to do more research, but just by name recognition, I think it's fair to say that you would think so. But at the same time, that hurts Memphis in the long run in a variety of ways, whether it's Kevin Love's contract, whether it's the first-round pick. That's a move that a Chris Wallace front office would have made. And Zach Kleiman, in fairness to him, has not done anything to suggest that he would make that kind of deal. And I don't necessarily think he will. But again, you hear reports, you hear sneaky buyer. It comes down to how you perceive that word and how you interpret what that means. And that is what made me pause earlier today.
Yes, that makes sense in the sense of use. When again, I think when I hear the term buyer, I view Mo Harkless as buying, because I view Mo Harkless as a competent NBA player, or I view Malik Beasley as buying as well, because that is a guy you can go out and get that you might have, like you explained it, might have otherwise had access to. So I think there's a little bit of like back and forth in terms of like buying and selling. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of, do you view that as a sell or a buy? And I think those can get convoluted in the way you're explaining it, in terms of how you view the trade. You know, do you go out and say, okay, I'm going to go out and get Mo Harkless, instead of, okay, I'm going to take back Mo Harkless in terms of, you know, giving away, you know, trading you Andre Iguodala. So I think there's a little bit of like that going on, the sense of just like some of these trades in terms of the way you view them through whatever prism or lens or however that works. I think there's some of that going on, you know, like that's just the way you view it in terms of that particular player and what he provides to the Grizzlies roster. Now, I am with you in totally 100%. There's a reason you should go out and give away picks to make the playoffs. Like, if you're going out and try to get a player so that you can make the playoffs right now, like, so that you're going to try to make a run, that is dumb. But it's also not something that the Grizzlies front office would do. Like, I don't think they're going to do that, because they haven't shown, I mean, through all the transactions they did in the summer, which was a ton, they haven't shown the dumbness, or however you want to say it, that a Chris Wallace front office has did before to do this type of deals. All they've done is make really, really smart deals. So I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt there in terms of how they're going to be a buyer. Let's take one more quick break. We'll be right back. We'll finish up with Joe Monix. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Joe Monix from GrizzlyBearBlues.com. I want to continue this conversation of the trade. I'll ask you this, Joe. What about, in terms of buying, what about if you say, okay, I'm going to go out and get Bogdan Bogdanovic, but it's going to cost me a first rounder. Are you there? Are you saying
no?
So you're saying you're not giving away a first rounder for any type of player.
I am not giving up a first rounder for anything that I can possibly get in free agency.
Here's the thing is, though, they've never gotten those players in free agency ever.
But it's restricted free agency. Free agency.
Okay, but I just gave him as a player. They've never gotten those players in restricted free agency. So why would you not want to go and seal your fate so you can match whatever offers you get in a player like that, and that you're never going to have access to? And it's going to make your team better for the long term.
You think if Memphis offered him a 3-year max contract, which would be a drastic overpay for Bogdan Bogdanovic, the Sacramento Kings would match?
Probably not, but you don't have to do that if you go out and trade for him. Well, you have to make your team better, and, you know, beyond Ja and Jaren, I'd say maybe in Clark, there's a lot of guys that I'd be willing to part with. I'd be willing to give up Dylan Brooks or Marco, even picks, if that makes my team better for, you know, the short term and, you know, or the long term and also the short term. Like, I'm okay with making my team better. And if that's through trades, which is historically the only way they've been able to make this team better, is through trades. Now, that might change over the next few years with this core, and people probably want to play with Ja and Jaren. That maybe the way people view the team maybe changes over the next few years. But I'm always like, you know, if it takes picks, if it takes Marco Guterich, if it takes Dylan Brooks, and that's a deal that I view as good for this team to make them better, I'd say do it. I don't know what, you know, there's all kinds of those deals are floating around. We've mentioned a couple, Joe Harris, obviously Malik Beasley, Bogdan Dobanovich, you know, all type of things. And if for some reason the Pelicans decide they want Brandon Ingram, which is not going to happen, but that'd be great. Or Tatum or any of those type of things. You go out and make the team better in whatever means possible for you. And if that's trade and that's free agency, however that is, and if it's a good deal that comes along, you just take it. And if that's good for your team, that's good for your team. The biggest thing here that we both probably agree on is this front office is our trust and support over the deals they went through over the summer, because they are all very, very smart deals. So we'll see what happens. Joe, I appreciate you coming on again. If you're not already reading Joe's stuff over at grizzlybearblues.com, along with all their other good writers, some good friends of mine, go read their stuff, grizzlybearblues.com. Joe, I appreciate you joining me. We'll do it again next week.
Mark, enjoy your little break you have coming up, buddy. Well deserved. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Thanks.